Fish wakes early the next morning, shaves his mustache, and almost cuts his mullet before carefully setting the scissors on the counter like the dangerous object that they are. He winks at his scrubbed face in the mirror, his hair slicked back. Looking good. Good enough for two shooter fingers. Pow, pow. He unbuttons the collar of the starchy blue Oxford he bought last night, pulls it over his head, steps into his new beige pants. Then he drives to work smelling and feeling better than he has since the senior prom after he won state champions. Best night of his life. He moves the rearview mirror to get another look at his clean, shaven upper lip. It hasn't been that smooth since...
Oh, shit!
He slams on the brakes, just in time to avoid hitting...
Mom!
A large moose.
Get out of the road, Mom. I have to go to work. I'm the new postmaster.
The moose gives him a look that seems to say, lower your voice.
But I have to.
Then the creature turns and walks away, and it's limping.
Hey, are you okay? Mom? That looks pretty bad. Hang on. I'll get someone. I said I'll get someone.
You're listening to The Cold Plunge, a radio play by Sonny Blankinger. This is Act 3.
Carl wakes up much later, feeling empty and confused. While waiting for coffee, he puts on a record, plugs in new air fresheners, and pulls a basket out from underneath his couch. Inside the basket are a variety of knitted animals, colorful and obviously handmade. He was not the greatest knitter. He knew his talents lay elsewhere, yet he never gave up, and he never got better. He looks out his front window at the little music boxes dangling from string in his tree. He had hung them there years ago, his way to connect with every new parent in the neighborhood. Anytime he was home and caught someone with a small child stopping to wind up a music box, he'd go out and offer them a knitted toy, claiming his wife had made them. Sometimes an octopus or an elephant, sometimes a cow. All of them misshapen and impossibly charming. The children would eye these odd toys suspiciously before lurching for one and holding it tightly, realizing it was theirs to name and bring to life. Carl had accepted long ago that he would never have children. Acceptance never quite took away the longing, but it did flatten it into a low hum that only went quiet when he was able to bring joy to someone else's child. The one time this longing would not just go quiet, it would seem to evaporate when he took Myrna out for a pancake breakfast. She was mostly moody like a teenager, and it never bothered him because... the pain he had learned to live with, it was gone. He pushes the knitted animals around in their basket, then looks out the window and sees a young, exhausted father stopping with his child to wind up a music box in the tree. Carl steps outside with a basket of misshapen toys and asks the man if he could give them all to his son.
They remind me too much of my wife.
This is, of course, a lie. They remind him too much of his wish, something he has always pined for, and now he knows it had always been there, and so close by. The young father, worn out from another sleepless night, accepts the gifts with less emotion than Carl is hiding. His child, however, is thrilled. As they walk away, Carl turns and sees two familiar mail carriers a couple houses down. They haven't seen him yet, but he sees her.
Myrna.
Closer than he ever knew. The way her ears stick out, the big eyebrows, how did he never notice? Of course she's his daughter. It's not quite like looking in a mirror, more like looking through one. At what might have been. And it's not too late.
It was all the usual downsizing, restructuring, consolidating. I didn't really care about the why. Couldn't change it anyway. I was just thinking about where. Where could I go?
And you chose here?
I didn't really have a choice.
But your experience, 20 years, any post office would want that.
Yeah, that's what I thought. But when dozens of locations are restructuring, there's plenty of people with more experience than me, and they took the plum spots. In the end, it was here or take a demotion and a hell of a pay cut. I thought about it for a while.
A while? Come on. It's not that bad here.
Petal gives her a look.
Okay, yeah. It is.
Myrna drops the mail bag on the well-shoveled sidewalk, pulls open the top, and starts searching for the next package.
So are you still looking for another transfer?
I am. Yeah.
It's okay. I get it. I would too.
Why don't you?
No one else would put up with my, way of delivering.
Petal lifts her eyebrows and nods in agreement, then looks up the sidewalk.
Who in the world is that?
Myrna looks over to see Carl walking towards them, unshaven, hair sticking up, wearing pajamas and a robe, his terry cloth belt untied and dragging in the snow.
That's the one person who would put up with me.
Hi, Myrna.
Myrna puts her head back in the mailbag. Carl shrugs at Petal.
She's always been a hard worker. Yeah. Oh, sorry, my manners. You must be the new transfer.
Petal Bunce, yes.
Hi.
Hello.
He smiles at her just long enough to be awkward and then glances back at Myrna, hiding in the mailbag.
Did she, drop something down there?
She's looking for the next package.
Looking? Don't you sort the mail first in the mailroom?
I do, yes, or I did. I'm trying to learn it her way.
Her way? I didn't know she had a way.
You never asked.
You're right, I didn't, but I'd like to change that. I'd like to learn.
Myrna looks up at him, finally.
There isn't much time for that anymore, is there?
Actually, there is. I'm not taking the plunge.
What? Why?
Her reaction is bigger than he expected, and he can't tell what it means.
Well, I'm...
His throat tightens, mouth goes dry, unable to read her.
I'm staying for love.
So she talked you out of it?
No, this is my decision.
The softness in his face triggers something in Myrna that she has been trying to avoid. Hope. If Carl can back out last minute, maybe her sister also... No, she can't. She can't give in to this. She tried talking to her. She tried talking to countless others. Nothing works. Not in this town. And yet, here stands Carl, smiling like a new man, radiating with hope. She feels nauseous.
Come on, Petal. We should keep moving.
She hoists the mail bag up and turns to walk away, but Petal lingers, looking at Carl.
That's really sweet. Why you're staying.
Yeah.
What? Doesn't she know?
Carl watches his adult daughter walk down the sidewalk, hauling a mailbag half her size.
Not yet, no.
So tell her.
It sounds easy, doesn't it?
Mrs. Glass is not one to dwell, especially on her day off, so after waking in a good cry, she cleans her home, watches a daytime soap opera, has another cry, gets a little annoyed with herself, then grabs her long axe and goes outside to chop wood like a pro. After splitting several logs, she looks up to see Carl walking toward her, still in pajamas and a robe, looking like a train wreck and holding a styrofoam clamshell.
Can we try again? I brought these.
He opens the styrofoam to reveal a stack of cold, rubbery pancakes.
How old are those?
Not more than an hour. Well, a little more. I went to Misha's, and you weren't there. And then my truck broke down and in the parking lot, so I took the bus. Takes forever. And people talk so much. I don't want to know all their personal things.
Neither do I.
Not anymore.
What do you mean?
I mean, I'd love some pancakes, even when they look like hell.
She lets him in and makes him take a shower and brush his teeth. And for a moment, they both forget everything and feel complete safety.
It had to be you. It had to be you. I wandered around, finally found somebody who could make me be true.
Could make me be true.
Could make me feel blue.
Could make me feel blue.
Or even be glad, just to be sad, thinking of you.
The church choir is rehearsing sacred music that the priest has spent his life pretending to understand. Right now, he's in another room of the church, just behind the high wall of the altar. Air rifles are held in a rack, boxes of darts stacked on a table with fleece blankets, battery-powered shears, gauze, disinfectant, rows of glass bottles carefully labeled, neuromuscular blocking agents, adrenoceptor agonists, cyclohexanes. On another wall hang parkas and gloves, sturdy pants with suspenders sewn in, rubber boots lined up on the floor. In the center of the room is a red dogwood tree, its waxy branches reaching up toward the skylight, and on the highest wall, the wall that goes all the way up to the steeple, is a hand-painted family tree with branches connecting everyone, names drawn in calligraphy. Above the name of every town elder is a detailed rendering of the moose believed to be carrying their soul. When this painting was begun 100 years ago, it was 1894, and men stood on rickety wooden ladders to begin the mural at the very top of the wall with a painting of a single moose, an albino with blue eyes, and lovingly written below her dewlap, the princess. The mural has been expanding ever since, now reaching the corners and the floor. The town artist will make one last addition after the final plunge. This space has already been washed and primed. The name reads Sasha Glass, connected by branches to Myrna and Mr. and Mrs. Glass. And after the moose has been observed in the wild and painted on this wall, then it will finally stop, frozen in time. 100 years of lunacy. Val always felt like an imposter in this room. Despite his experience in hunting and tracking, his knowledge of wildlife medicine never led to confidence among the more burly men that tend to gather back here after church service. But today he is alone, only the voices of the choir keeping him company, and everything that could go wrong this morning has. He had planned to be deep in the woods by now, but he slept past his alarm. Tried for a quick shower, but the pilot light was out. He relit it while dripping cold and wet, then found he was out of coffee and nothing was where it was supposed to be.
Are you fucking serious?
While in his room gathering supplies, he knocked over a bluish bottle of disinfectant, tripped over a pair of boots that someone left out, and he got the zipper of his backpack caught in the fabric. He's had ample reason to practice his new phrase.
Are you fucking serious?
Then the door burst open and Fish rushes in.
Thank God I found you. I mean, thank you, Lord.
Fish hastily makes the sign of the cross with his hand. Val sees that he does this incorrectly, looks away in disgust, and then realizes that he doesn't care.
Fish, what is it? My mom, she's injured in her back hoof. She was limping. I told Jim to clean up better. I didn't hit her with my truck. She was already limping. I think it's something in her hoof. I know it's something in her hoof. It's a nail.
She nibbles that dogwood by the shed that Jim's building. I told them to cut it down. There's a reason we only have one dogwood in here. It's like candy to them.
It might get infected.
It'll be fine. Just remove the nail, clean with chlorhexidine, dry it out.
Val pulls out a map labeled Home Ranges and traces his finger along a red, misshapen circle labeled Mrs. Fishkalnikov.
Your mother's range is fairly small. I was going out there anyway.
Fish stands there helplessly while Val packs supplies.
So you going alone?
No, never go alone to treat an elder. You know that, right?
Yeah, of course.
I'll call up Pemberton. He should be home.
Val zips up his pack, grabs an air rifle and a box of tranquilizers.
What if he's not?
Then I'll call someone else. Fish, your mom will be okay.
I know.
Then what is it?
Fish puts his hands in his pockets and looks down.
Can I come?
Val tries to think of a reason to say no. Half an hour later, they've picked up the moose's tracks.
Where do you think she's going?
Well, she just had her fill of dogwood, so probably back to one of her resting spots.
They're both wearing parkas with elder care insignia sewn on them. Durable pants with reinforced padding over the thighs, knees, and shins, and carrying backpacks filled with supplies.
But the injury, would she still go with the injury?
If she can walk, and clearly she can.
He nods at the tracks they're following.
Then she'll stick to her routine.
What if she gets mad?
Val taps his air rifle.
That's why I have this. Anesthetizer with a dart and she'll be calm and happy, barely awake.
Oh, shoot. I forgot my gun.
You have a gun?
In my mail truck.
Do you know how to use it?
Fish thinks of the many times he's shot at the sky and only the sky.
I mean, I've never hit anything, but I can use it.
Yeah, when we're done today, maybe let me trade you an air rifle for that. Our job is to help. Not harm.
I didn't.
Or frighten.
Okay.
What was all that back there with Carl?
All what?
You wouldn't look at him. Then you left real fast. Aren't you happy? He's backing out.
Yes, I'm happy.
But?
But I'm also trying to protect myself.
From what?
From hope. I've given into it before, and it falls through every time. Can't go through that again.
I think he means it. You don't have to hope. He's sticking around.
I know. I mean my sister, Sasha. I can't hope that she might also back out, because she won't. Nothing stops her. When they announced the final plunge, I was certain that Sasha wouldn't win. She couldn't.
How did she?
There was a game. It's what any small town might invent for an afternoon of fun. But the origins of it are...
traumatic. Nauseating.
Basically the origins of our town.
It's a children's game. They arrange themselves in a circle, taking the largest spoon they can find and setting it on some kind of fulcrum, a rock or a branch, whatever they want.
But this game wasn't invented out of thin air. I know that because of what they put in the spoon.
A perfectly boiled egg with rouge painted on for lips and big blue eyelashes, a conservative skirt glued around the middle.
It's supposed to be one of our town founders. This princess that fled Russia.
A plump angel with a delicate shell.
Anyway, the kids would be in their circle. They'd count to three, stomp on the spoon handle, and launch their princess eggs into the air.
First one to land clean in the middle wins.
What's in the middle?
A bowl filled with snow and just enough water to make it slushy.
Like the lake that everyone knows.
Yeah. The princess was the first to jump in.
Not jump, more like pushed, shoved, held down under the water.
The story goes, this princess, she fell in love with a priest, which was very much not allowed. So they fled with members of the clergy and the court that were loyal and gave it a go here. But then the priest fell in love with someone else.
What an asshole.
Well, who knows if any of this is true.
It's close.
But if it is, the next part tracks.
She was heartbroken and jumped in a frozen lake.
That's the story.
And that's the game your sister won?
Yeah. When they announced the final plunge, they said the whole town could play. So everyone gathered into circles, and she kept winning as the rest of us got eliminated. I was shocked. She was never any good at it. Neither of us were. But I never cared, and she did. And the thing about caring and losing over and over, it's hard to let go. So when all of us grew out of it, she kept practicing, secretly. And when she made it to the final round, some part of me thought, no. There's no way. And then it happened. Her egg landed clean in the middle. Everyone cheered. I felt like half of me was about to die. It's been a year and that feeling hasn't really left.
Well, yeah, she's your twin sister. Twins are supposed to be of one mind, almost inseparable.
But we're not. We haven't gotten along since we were little. Once we grew up, we were both happy to live on opposite ends of town. We're polite when we pass on the street, which always leaves me feeling sad. We live separate lives. It mostly works. The holidays are awkward. Only because our mom wants us to visit at the same time. But that just becomes an extended version of pretend we're passing on the street.
And she goes on Sunday?
Final plunge on Sunday.
So what were you heading out here for, besides my mom?
I need to check on the princess.
Is she okay?
Yeah, she's fine.
So why are you checking on her?
It's routine.
How old were you when you became a priest?
Same as my father and his father.
How old was that?
We all train until we're 30, and then they hand us the big hat, so to speak.
Were you ready?
I guess. As much as I could be.
How did you know?
I didn't. I just knew it was time I'd step up, and I did. But I was nervous. I remember that.
Did it last long, the nervousness?
3 months? Maybe six? I don't know. It's hard to say because it's gradual, right? You're never really ready for anything until you start. And then you learn, and you get better.
As they hike the snow-covered woods, the albino moose keeps a short distance behind them. She moves slower than she once did, but no less gracefully, no less silently. She has spent her life watching Val and anyone that wanders in the woods, and they never seem to know just how close she is.
Kidding? I'm pretty sure the whole town remembers that goal.
Yeah, but we'd lost.
Did you? That I don't remember. All I know was our goalie was scrambling to get up, the puck was flying, and then you stopped it. You brought it straight down to the ice and took it all the way back, through one guy's legs and then another, and I still wonder how you did this. Through both defensemen? I couldn't even see where the puck went.
Neither could I. If I'm honest.
Well, exactly. You never seemed to even look. You just felt it. You slipped past their whole team and shot it just under the goalie. I remember thinking, I thought he sat on it, and then the net whipped back and I knew. He did it. Fish did it again.
Yeah, I did.
You ever think about coaching?
No, I never.
Pemberton's getting older. Someone has to step up.
I haven't been on the ice in years.
Forget about your injury. Coaches don't have to play. They just have to see.
Everyone hates me.
Hey, that's not true. Trust me, you step on that ice, everyone will get silent, eager for your direction.
We should do this more often.
Oh, yeah. I mean, yeah.
How much are you out here?
All the time.
Really?
Yeah, I mean, checking on the elders, it's a big part of my job. And I can't do it alone.
Well, I know that. Never go alone.
Yeah, that's right. Never go alone. Hold up a sec. There's two sets of tracks.
Val crouches to look more closely.
They're going different ways.
He pushes the snow in one of the tracks, and then the other.
They weren't here at the same time. See the sharp edges on these? And the snow in the middle, it's still soft. This track's a little more fresh.
So which ones do we follow?
Well, these prints are about 30 inches apart, all of them. But not these. They're shorter. That's the limp.
How did you learn all this?
My father used to take me hunting all the time.
One of the other carriers, maybe Randall, I'm still learning their names, but he told me Fish just wants to be postmaster because no one ever loved him.
I don't know. Fish got plenty of love from his mother. She was kind of amazing. Their home always smelled of pies and fresh bread, and she'd always open the door in an apron, always dusted in flour. She wasn't a big talker, but the few words she said could be shocking in their kindness. As if she knew exactly what you needed to hear. Mostly she was humming to herself. Fish was their only kid. They had him late, and both parents could have retired before he grew up. But his father was practical, and he volunteered to delay his retirement till Fish was grown. So, when Fish was 12, his mother took her plunge.
Oh my God.
Val and Fish followed the tracks for an hour until...
There.
I don't see...
Right there. Look.
A brown moose, dusted in snow, limps out from behind a willow tree and looks at Fish in his professional-looking outfit. His padded pants and thick parka, his clean shave. Fish feels a tingle around his ears because to him, her look can only mean one thing. Pride.
Hi, Mom. We're here to help.
He takes a step towards her.
Wait, don't.
Why not?
We have to tranquilize her first.
She's gentle. She's always been.
Not when they're injured. It makes them unpredictable. Trust me.
Val loads a dart into his air rifle.
Is it gonna hurt?
Just a pinch and she'll lie down.
Okay.
He lifts the air rifle, takes aim, and...
Ooh.
Don't worry. It's actually a perfect shot. Fish, she's okay. There she goes, lying down. Come on.
They get up and walk slowly towards the large animal.
When she took the plunge, everyone celebrated. Even Fish, who really thought life as a moose could be glorious. What he didn't know was how quiet and wooden his home would become without his mother. His father meant well. He just never knew how to be warm or attentive. The few words he said were informative. Not always what you needed to hear in the moment. So this jolly kid, who was endlessly practicing his slap shot and singing whatever tune his mom had been humming, who talked to everybody and made endless bad jokes, he was suddenly this tall and silent teenager, always with a cold, always wiping snot from the few soft hairs he had for a mustache. Teenagers can be moody, so no one thought much of it. And neglect is tough. You can't point it out. You can't see the marks. You don't even know how to ask for what you're not getting. because the person that gave you affection is gone.
Is she?
She's fine, and she can hear you. Her eyes are open. See?
Oh, Mom. Mom. You went too soon. I wasn't ready. I needed you. I still do.
It's okay. It's okay, Fish. I got you. I got you.
Thank God he found ice hockey. That pretty much saved his life. You should have seen him tearing across the ice with such confidence. It was beautiful to watch. And every time, as he'd pick up speed, sailing around another opponent, controlling the puck with ease, the crowd would begin to cheer his name. And that's when you would see it. That glow he used to have as a kid. My mom says, and she's probably right, that when people cheered for him, it was the closest he felt to love after his mom left.
Will she wake up soon?
About an hour. Let's get this nail out of her foot and clean the wound.
Okay. It's okay, Mom. We're gonna get the nail out and then clean the wound.
As soon as I have it out, you pour this over it, okay?
Okay, yeah.
Okay.
It lasted a couple years. Then he got hit, knee on knee, and never stepped on the ice again. It hasn't stopped him from looking, constantly looking for that kind of love, that kind of recognition. Unfortunately, he's not good at anything besides hockey, so no one cheers him on anymore. The worst part is when he asks. He will literally ask people to cheer his name. Every time he starts up with that, I have to leave the room. I can't handle it. I'm not proud of that, but I just can't.
Val, look.
There she is. Where have you been?
About 20 feet away, the albino moose steps into view. They only see her when she chooses to be seen. In this case, it's a sign of gratitude for their caretaking. But she won't stay long. She never does. She can almost disappear when standing still, her white fur blending perfectly with the snowy landscape. One moment, her ears are flicking. You turn to see what she's looking at. And then she's gone.
What's she doing here?
I don't know, but what luck. I was worried I wouldn't find her in time, and then there she is.
In time for what?
You know how it felt when your mom went? It's gonna be like that for Myrna. Or worse, I mean, they're twins.
Yeah.
I have a plan to stop it.
Stop the final plunge?
And the princess is the key.
How?
Well, first we need to... Where'd she go?
They had both looked away just long enough for the albino to vanish. Walking away so quietly, one could believe that she floats if it weren't for the tracks she leaves in the snow.
Well, she must have went that way.
Right, good. We'll follow those tracks, tranquilize her, bring her back to the pen.
Hey, what about Mom?
She'll be fine. Her wound's clean, and it's better, really, if we're not here when she wakes up.
Okay.
They take a few steps, and then Fish turns.
Bye, Mom. You're gonna be okay.
They follow the tracks of the albino moose, the oldest creature in the woods, the one who sees everything and seems to float, the one the entire town thinks is me. But I'm no princess, no. I am a queen. At least that's the word people would use these days. It's not how I would have described myself back then, back when I was plump and delicate, when I had to flee and find what I thought would be a refuge in this quiet Alaskan valley.
The Cold Plunge was written and directed by Sonny Blechinger, starring Kurt Conroyd as narrator, Samiret Rios as Myrna Glass, Bruce Burkhartsmeyer as Carl Kowaleski. Claire Rigsby as Petal Bunts. Finley Vleer as Fish Oleski Pishkalnikov. Diane Kondrat as Mrs. Glass. Sonny Blekinger as Val Valentine Ivchenko. Casting by John San Nicolas. Recorded at Singing Sands Studios with sound engineer Callie Day. Mixing by Jeff Stewart Salzman. Sound design by Sonny Blekinger. Stunt driving by Evan Ling, Carl Christoffers. Story consultants Jacob Aiello, Matt Coram, Dan Glabitzi. This project was funded in part by a grant from the Regional Arts and Culture Council. Thank you for listening.
Sound different.
Maybe. Like, you want me to skid?
If you can.
Okay.
That's actually awesome. I think that's realistic. Let's do one more, but don't talk.
Yep.